not flowing back, there's no, I guess I don't get
Carol,
it.
Carol, can you get us out of the difficulty?
Help me, I'm sorry.
Well, I guess if it flows back, you lose the connection of meaning to your creative piece.
You lose the meaning?
I would say yes.
So it flows back into the unconscious and it's
the... Yeah, the connection with it, I guess. What do you think, Gary?
I think about that now that you raised the question. Where I went, and I don't know whether this is defendable or defensible or not, that it's this, is it the creative process or the creative product? And once you've made the creative product, that's the protection against the uncertainty of the creative process.
This is empty, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, that's why we went next door. But you can go ahead and get one in there.
Oh, I can?
Uh-huh. You just choose your packet and stick it in and push the button.
Oh, man.
Oh, it's not really too bad.
So once you've made it, that is been born in time and space. And then you're in a new land at that point. That's what he said. I'm in a new land, and nothing brought up should flow back. Does that mean his ego is strong enough now that he can say what needs to be said, do what needs to be done, create whatever, and it can't be torn down because he has the foundation?
Maybe it's something like this, and I think I'm somewhat close to where you are. There's the creative inspiration, and then there's putting that into reality. And once you've been inspired, you don't need to be inspired anymore. You need to put into reality what you've just done.
And to me, that inspiration is a constant spiral of you're inspired over and over and over again. So that could be the creative process. We get an inspiration, and then, you know, like Carol was sharing her painting in class.
Yeah.
She'd worked on those images, 30 years? And did that inspiration just come instantaneously for that piece, or was that a process of coming into being?
I would say, as opposed to someone who has had an inspiration and never created it.
Yes.
Okay.
And then it flows back. That's the flowing back.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And let's say, sorry to make you our guinea pig, Carol, but you have begun painting. And that was a recognition of what you do. That's done. That recognition is done. And yes, each picture may be inspired, but the fundamental orientation was set.
The tower's there.
Yeah.
The canal is open.
And
not flowing backwards.
Right. And to always be saying, well, someday I'm going to paint a picture. I know I can paint. Someday I'm going to paint a picture. It might be the flowing back. Maybe it's something like that. Like I say, well, Mozart, wasn't he always inspired to write another symphony? Yes, but once he was inspired to write his kind of music, and once he did that, then he had to follow through with that, and to live in the limbo of I'm going to be a great composer would be it flowing back. That's one way to possibly look at it.
I'll think about it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Kathy, you might have been using inspiration in a couple different ways there. The word inspiration was first of all, I thought meant the vision, what you see, what someone might have, you know, the vision. But inspiration can also be that encouragement, spiritual element, whatever it is, it keeps you at it, keeps you going. You feel inspired to bring the vision into fruition. And
so it's like an energy.
I'm not sure which definition is. I mean, there's two good definitions, but one is, say, I'm inspired to work today. Might mean to get back to painting my vision that I began 30 years ago or something.
Yeah, I wonder if the Kabiri here are the forces that carry up that first vision. Something like that.
Yeah. That carry it into
consciousness.
They say
into consciousness.
Okay.
And then consciousness has to put it into reality.
They say that they are also the canals which everything also flows back again. That's how they describe themselves. So they're both ways.
Right. But in the danger, well, let me try a different angle. I remember hearing a tape by Edinger saying, you know, you do get an image of what your creative work is about. And then all you have to do is do it. He's saying all you have to do it humorously.
Yeah.
But until you start doing it, your vision can slip away from you, and that could be the flowing back. So Jung has gotten his fundamental orientation, and he doesn't need it again. So that's why he can kill them. But in another way, he's going to be using them all the time as inspiration for his work. That's about as good as I can get it. I think, like Anne said, it's clarifying the distinction between having an inspiration and doing something about it, and having an inspiration and not doing anything about it. That's what is at stake here.
And then coming to a point where you can't get it back.
Yeah. Does that help?
It does help.
It's not clear, I agree.
And if you put the tower in there too, the tower would be that it's not going to, he's not going to lose what he's built, that foundation. This is who I am. This is who I am to be in time and space.
Or another way to put it, you know, what he did from 1928 to 44 was simply write essay after essay clarifying the images in this material. That's the tower. To not have done that would have been to let it fall back. Now, maybe what he doesn't quite realize is, and I think it's fair to say this, 1944 is going to be another night sea journey. And so the Kabiri came back, will come back then. He thought he got it over, he thought he had it all figured out. Well, he didn't. Because he didn't sufficiently take account of evil.
But he probably would have never gotten to that second one had he not worked.
Yeah, the first.
Yeah. And I was just reading this article on the water towers in Pompeii and how they brought the water in, but it was under such force that to slow it down, they had these water towers and it literally, the water went up to the top of the tower and then came down slower. And so what I was equating to what you were just saying was that you have this initial influx of inspiration, whatever you want to call it, and then there's little increments that are given to you time after time to help you along the way.
Yeah.
So that you don't get that rush and go crazy like some people have.
I think we're circling around the same issue. The practical issue, as I see it in my work, is there are people who really have something to do, and they really don't know what it is. And our work is figuring that out. And there are other people who have something to do, do know what to do, and kind of piddle around. And those are the ones where it's in danger of falling back. So it's like a two-step process, getting the thing up here, and then getting, or up here, wherever, and then getting it out there. And when it's only here, it's in danger of falling back. But once it's out there, which is what the tower would represent, then it's not going to fall back. You know, like the would-be artist.
Or writer.
Or writer.
I've got a book in me. As soon as I get retired, I'm going
to be. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, good question. I'm not sure we've got it totally answered, but maybe we got some idea. But I think the tower is what we have been working on this whole class, getting to that point. Few grasp my tower since it stands on a high mountain, but many will see it and not grasp it.
Prophetic.
Yeah. And maybe a source of the inflation as well. Again, you know, I say that as a shade of gray, not black and white. Therefore, my tower will remain unused. That's true. I see that all the time. Oh, yeah. It has not, underline, circle, star, otherwise demarcate, not, arisen from a patchwork of human thoughts. But it's been forged from the growing heat of the innards. Growing heat of the innards is what we've been reading for the last months. The Kabiri themselves carried the matter to the mountain and consecrated the building with their own blood as the soul keepers of the mystery of the Genesis. I build it out of the lower and upper, beyond, and not from the surfaces of the world. Therefore it is new and strange and towers over the plains inhabited by humans. This is the solid and the beginning. And I really think that is the beginning of his work. I've united with the serpent of the beyond. All that stuff about spirit and matter, I have accepted everything beyond into myself. From this I have built my beginning. When this work was completed, I was pleased, and I felt curious to know what might still lie at my beyond. So I approached my serpent and asked her amiably whether she would not like to creep over to bring me news of what was happening in the beyond. The serpent was weary and said that she has no liking for this. We are at February 2nd, 1914. I don't want to force anything, but perhaps, who knows, we will still find out something useful. For a while, the serpent hesitated. Then she disappeared into the depths. Soon I heard her voice. I believe that I have reached hell. There is a hanged man here, a plain, ugly man with a contorted face stands before me. He has protruding ears and a hunchback. He said, I am a poisoner who was condemned to the rope. And then dialogue. What did you do? I poisoned my parents and my wife. Remember we had that question, should I do that? So he is...
What? Should I do that?
Yeah. Should I sever my own roots, kill my own people?
Okay, so you're equating that with Jung's action on the previous page of...
Yeah.
Of severing the knot of the brain.
Yes, and how it's affecting, the question is, how literally should we take the family here? I don't think too literally. But how does it affect my relationship to my time, my times. And what it does is it severs him from collective consciousness.
So this is a part of him severed from collective consciousness.
Or he is severing from collective consciousness. He's realizing.
I mean the poisoner is a part of Jung that's separated from...
Or he's the part of Jung that has separated Jung from collective consciousness.
Ah.
You know, if you go to, at your leisure, you go to the front piece of the book, the front piece has the quote on it. I don't know where it's from. It must be from memories, I'm guessing. My entire life consisted in elaborating what had burst forth from the unconscious and flooding me like an enigmatic stream and threatened to break me. So it's the breaking here, I think, is the poison. And then he says, I poisoned my parents and my wife. Why'd you do that? To honor God. What? To honor God? What do you mean by that? Well, to honor God would mean to honor the voice of what has been revealed to him, namely what preceded. And then a little farther down, I am also puzzled by this statement. I was now alone and very unhappy. See where I am? I was very alone and unhappy. I wanted to live for the sake of my two children, for whom I foresaw a better future. I was in better health than my wife, so I wanted to live. I don't know who those two children are. Because Jung had five children by this point. So unless they are the two opposites or something like that, I'm open to any other ideas. No ideas?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's about his marriage. Because a little farther down where it says he, the last he, third line, we only speak together here and there and only about trivial things, small matters from our earlier daily life. But completely impersonal, as if we no longer had anything to do with each other. So I'm not sure what that means.
It sounded to me like he was in a very deep depression.
Well, it could be something like Brother Klaus, who leaves his wife and in order to tend to his children, his thoughts, his spiritual life.
Could be. Well, in any case, the thing that is clear is, I think, the poison. Interrupting his previous lifestyle, putting it the most benignly. And driving a wedge between him and the way things were. And over the next column, I think the operative lines are, well, I'll go down 9 or 10 lines. The second column, doesn't the devil ever torment you? The devil, I've seen nothing of him. and a little farther down, I assume that you're in the deepest hell. And he says, I don't care, I guess I can go now. Can I? Farewell. In other words, this guy is in the deepest hell. That's why he doesn't need the devil. So it would be the part of Jung that was suffering through this time had to destroy what what the world had to offer, because Jung was creating another one. Everyone with me on that?
Say no. It again.
Let's back up to say it again.
Okay. Well, just first, you see the quotes, doesn't the devil ever torment you? The devil. I've seen nothing of him. See that, everybody?
Mm-hmm.
And then go down 8 lines. That is bleak. I assume that you are in the deepest hell. because he is in the deepest hell, he doesn't need to see the devil. Because he's living the devil's reality. So he could be the part of Jung that really went through misery. And now Jung is seeing it. And accepting the poison that has to be laid before the world insofar as his work contradicts many collective values. And then suddenly he vanished. Still with me? But I turned to the serpent. Interesting, in the black book, it's got soul. So that's what we talked about earlier. Is the serpent the soul? Is the soul the serpent? Well, depends how you look at it. And said, what should this boring guest from beyond mean? And the serpent says, I'm skipping a little bit. There is nothing personal whatsoever. I've jumped around quite a bit. Do you see where I am? Serpent says, it seems so. There's nothing but motion. When I make my way over there, everything merely surges back and forth in a shadowy way. There's nothing personal whatsoever. Now, we're just repeating same stuff from a different angle, meaning in the unconscious, that material is not personalized. It's just an inrush of instinct or fantasy or desire. And the personal comes when the ego engages with it. We've said that in a million different ways. It's just coming back in new language.
So when it comes up, it is very personal, but down there, not so much.
I would say when it comes up and it's worked with.
Could you also say that you see nothing of the devil when you've integrated your own personal channel, maybe?
I don't think so. I think you still see it. It's when you're so obliterated by what you're going through that bad seems trifling in comparison to how rotten you feel. You know, the world's going to blow up. Oh, well, so what? Just going to be dead anyway. Kind of thinking. So it in a way is a return to what we've already integrated, but it's coming back to tempt him and he doesn't fall for it. Serpent says, as always when one speaks of the, that that's enlightening and somewhat boring. And then the serpent says, as always when one speaks of the beyond, it goes on withering away, particularly since we have balanced the opposites and married. I believe the dead will soon become extinct. Well, they will only become extinct if we cease wrestling with the serpent, which is what he's trying to get to happen. He wants to be lived out directly. I think that's where I had you read to.
It is.
Could you just go back up to where the serpent says you can never reconcile personal life with absolute life?
Yes.
And kind of, the personal life, would that be the life that Jung was living?
Yes.
And the absolute life is the life that he is supposed to live.
I took absolute life negatively as being driven by the unconscious.
And the personal life is?
Having wrestled with it and made your own unique reaction to it. Okay. You know, Hitler lived an absolute life. The archetype of power simply ran through him. That's how I understood it. I'm not saying I'm right.
Well, then he goes on to ask about uniting those opposites, as if
yeah.
the personal life and the absolute life are opposite.
Right.
And the serpent says that they're not.
They're
opposites.
Not. Yeah. Because the personal life is the particularization of the absolute life. It's like you might say uniting the fish and the sea. The sea contains the fish, and you pull the fish out because it's a part of the sea that you're seeking to get hold of. It makes no sense to say, let's unite the fish and the sea. They're two different dimensions of life. Now you might unite two fish that you pull out.
So the personal life would be serving the self.
Yes.
And the absolute life would just be bouncing off instincts?
Identification with the self, bouncing off instincts, being driven by collective patterns, being at the mercy of all desires.
Totally unconscious.
Totally unconscious, yeah.
Thank you.
And, you know, I think what's a little confusing, in a way, in a certain aspect of our society, that's a goal. Oh, just free yourself up. Well, the guy who killed his kids freed himself up to his rage. See what I mean? That's what pure absolutism looks like. The unconscious just seizes you and moves you to act without any reflection.
So it'd be very strong in little children, right?
Sorry?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Is very strong, yeah. Strong little children slowly becomes weaker.
Right.
Maturing and getting developing egos.
And then yet trying to keep that channel open.
Right. And primitive peoples may have operated a great deal in the absolute.
Yeah. I mean, as an example, I remember Anthony Stevens had talked to me once, and he'd just gotten back from Africa, and he was in a village where a woman got sick. Maybe I told you this. A woman was sick. This is might have been the Maasai, or, you know, one of these original primal living groups. And they went to the witch doctor, and the witch doctor said, oh, Joe Smith over the next village has put a spell on her. So at night, the guys went over and killed him. See, that's just living out pure instinct. That's absolute. And the child's temper tantrum and say, you know, that's pure absolute. As he's using it here. Remember, we've got to interpret his language. We actually made some progress. You know, we're not far from the end. Well, let me qualify that. We have less than 10 pages to do in this section, and then we have another section called the scrutinies. I assume you want to do that. I haven't looked at it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'll be slower or faster. How many pages is the scrutinies?
Well, there's an epilogue, too.
Is there a lot there?
There's a lot. But there's also an epilogue.
So 36 pages. What's that? There's epilogue.
36 in the scrutinies?
Well, including the epilogue, there's 36.
I generally figure we do 2 pages a meeting. So that would be 5 more meetings to get this done. But we might speed up because, you know, I think what you have noticed, as we get to the end of something, we go faster because it's simply reworking what we've already done.
So scrutinies is 26.
26 pages. So 13, 18 more meetings. That means we would finish by Christmas of, by a year from now. Just to give you some idea. There is life after Red Book. But it's a tough thing, but I don't know. I'm loving it.
How far do you want us to go?
Okay. Let's see. Well, I was going to say to Ruman to number 2 on page 2324, but we might, you know, we did more than the 2 pages today. We might pick up. When we get into Salome on 325.
That's where we get to the end of the section.
Should we stop there? Or?
Where?
How about we go to 326, where, read to where Salome says, hang until you understand. So 326, just the first 3 lines. I don't know whether we might get all that done. So that's 320.
And since we have no more images, except
until
we get to the epilogue,
there are
some images.
Are there? But didn't we already look at those? Oh. I didn't even make slides of those.
Oh, there you go.
What do you mean?
Oh, I thought you'd be making them.
Oh, well, I could make them. Or is somebody here who's really good with slides? Did you reshoot these all, or what did we do with these? Or did you just Photoshop the ones I shot?
I Photoshopped your photos.
Well, I'll shoot them then. I'll shoot them.
And, you might want just to have them all in your...
Yeah, but then you could, if you don't mind shopping them?
No, not at all.
And what day are we meeting again?
So we meet 4 weeks from today.
4 weeks.
So what did I say? 326.
Yes.
3 lines. Oh, you can sit around and chat a bit. Questions, or are you tired of it, or? Okay. Okay. Well, you can munch a bit if you want, or not.